We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Abner Mares is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Mares, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is. He talks about all kinds of things like his journey from being a kid on the streets to becoming a boxing champion, and cover sports, music, culture, and family life. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Mares wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English are out on Tuesdays, and episodes in Spanish are out on Wednesdays. Welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Lecoe, joined by my co-host, Matt Wispay. This podcast is being brought to you by Blue Wire, Indeed, Pepsi, BetOnline, and of course, RotoViz. You can find us on Twitter at RotoViz CFB Show. You can follow Matt at Wispy the Kid, and I am at Stay Fun LeCoe. Before we get into things, though, I just wanted to let you know that even though sports had to take a little bit of a break, your business didn't. You had to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. And Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. This is the best offer available anywhere, so get on Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. This offer is valid through December 31st. All right, Matt, that was a lot. But we're ready for week 8 and the much awaited opening to the Big Ten. I am sure you are pumped beyond belief.
Indeed, I am.
Indeed.
I've been sitting here. I mean, I listen to Ohio State podcast after Ohio State podcast. Pretty much my entire day is listening to something in my ears telling me how awesome Ohio State is, which means that all of them open with like a countdown to when kickoff is coming.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been looking forward to this weekend for a while. It for so much of this summer and the beginning of the fall, it felt like it was never going to come. And now it's just we're right on the precipice of like the start. And I mean, I'm a little bit excited. Yeah.
It's nuts, man. It's finally here. I'm very excited. Of course, the Mountain West returns as well.
I mean, I'm also excited about that because that's more fun to bet.
They do have a postponed game already. Colorado State game. Their game got postponed. So that's a bummer. But yeah, I'm excited. We're going to get into the Big Ten in just a second here. I just wanted to give a quick rundown of what we have to look forward to. We're going to start off with some news and notes. Then we'll just do our little Can We Talk About segment, and then we'll follow it up by looking back at Week 7, see how we did on our picks, and talk about some of the games. And then, of course, we will look ahead to Week 8's slate and then finish off with our locks. It's going to be very exciting. We had a little bit of a hiccup to the recording. We were supposed to get started a while ago, and I got a call from my kid's school because my kid had been stung right in the eye by a bee, and he's allergic, and it was a whole thing. But he's all Benadryl'd up, and we're ready to rock and roll. And it just felt appropriate for some reason. Like, it's just 2020, man. It's just the year of all kinds of craziness. And getting stung in the eye just is very on par for the year.
So your kid delayed our Big Ten preview podcast by getting stung in the eye. That's fair.
Yeah. I do feel like we could spend a ton of time talking about the Big Ten and giving our predictions and picks for who we think is going to win what. And honestly, there's just so much to get to. So I do want to spend a little bit of time on it. I know you could spend probably 4 hours. So give me kind of what you think. What are your expectations out of the East? Let's start there because that's where your team resides. And obviously, we assume you're going to pick Ohio State. And you've talked quite a bit about Ohio State. Okay. So if you could do a little bit more talking of some of the other teams that maybe our listeners haven't heard you talk about, that would be great too. But I'm assuming that you're taking Ohio State to win the East.
Yeah, I mean, pretty clear cut. I think Ohio State is one of so we've been talking all this whole season so far about how there's like a very weird like top of the college football landscape right now, and that there might only be two good teams that have played, and Ohio State's the third one. So yes, Ohio State, clear tier above everyone. So yes, they're my pick to win the East. For the rest of the East, the teams that I mean, Penn State just lost Journey Brown. We'll dive into that here in a little bit. I don't think it changes them too much. They're really super talented. And the only player outside of Brown and Hamler on offense, that's really all they're losing, because they did bring Freiermuth back. So I think they should be good offensively. I'm a little bit interested to see what their defense looks like, because they also lose Yetur Gross-Matos and Micah Parsons from that defense, which was really strong last year. So they'll be interesting. I do think that they're going to be the pretty clear-cut second-best team in the East. Michigan's got a lot of question marks. We all thought they were going to move on to McCaffrey at quarterback, and obviously he decided to transfer out of the program. Despite it was kind of a strange occurrence, because he fought so hard to be like playing again, and he was one of like his whole family was part of that, like bring football back, and then the moment it brought football back, he transferred. So really crazy story, but they'll be fine. I think they'll be, honestly, once you get past Ohio State and Penn State, it gets really ugly in the East. So I think the truth is that they're going to have a pretty easy time slotting into that third spot. Indiana is what they are. They're going to be fine. They always seem, their coach is pretty solid. He's coaching them up he's been coaching them up the last couple of years. Michigan State kind of looks like a dumpster fire to me. I was looking into them a little more closely. They bring back guys that would be effective, but the problem is the team sucked last year and their offseason was more tumultuous than anyone else.
Absolutely. And they're going in the year with Rocky Lombardi as their starting quarterback. I mean,
and he can run, but he can't pass. So I don't have high hopes for Maryland. I will say there's a few receivers on that team that are pretty interesting. Rakeem Jarrett is the freshman receiver. Keep an eye on him. There's a lot of high expectations for him, although the quarterback situation there is an absolute mess. The one team I...
Tua's little brother is going to be slinging the rock.
Yeah, he's garbage. Tulia is garbage. He is hot garbage. He is not a Power 5 quarterback. He should have gone to a MAC school. I honestly said this whenever he was transferring. That story was only interesting because of his last name. He's not that good. And the one team I do think is kind of interesting, I don't think they'll be good. Don't take this as like, I think they're going to spoil. Rutgers brought in a lot of talent in the on the defensive side of the ball. via transfers. And they've got all these players who are immediately eligible. They brought in a kid from UCF along the defensive line, Malik Barrow. They brought in a kid from Michigan along the defensive line. They brought in a safety from Ohio State who was like the MVP of the Rose Bowl for him a couple years ago. So they have a little bit of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And I think the fact that Greg Schiano's last season at Ohio State, the defense was so bad, people forget that he's a good defensive coach. I partially blame that season on Alex Grinch because that was the first year that they were like tried to co-defensive coordinate. It was a weird year. So I think Rutgers defensively will at least be interesting, but they're still probably going to finish last. I think the way you have it on your list, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Indiana, Michigan State, Maryland, Rutgers is probably the right order. Realistically, anything after Michigan, it could go in any order, and I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good, quick rundown. A couple of my thoughts. I mean, you just went through my order of them. I think a lot hangs on kind of what Sean Clifford can do at Penn State as quarterback. He had, you know, good games and bad last year. He's going to need to be a little bit more explosive, I think, if they want to legitimately push Ohio State. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think there's much chance that Penn State finishes ahead of Ohio State. I think it's pretty much just playing for second place.
But you could, I mean, with the way that everything is like laid out this season, Penn State is going to have, let's say they have one loss on their year. They go 8-1. Let's get all of our nine games in. They go 8-1. They beat the number two team in the West. And I mean, is there a way that that's the fourth best team? Because for Georgia to win out, they're going to have to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. I don't see that happening. So that's a two loss team. For Notre Dame, they're going to probably have to play Clemson twice this year. Do you think they're going to beat Clemson either time? Probably not. No, so that's a two-loss team. So Penn State very well might be playing for fourth. And if they can get to fourth, I think it's a good spot for them. They could be a playoff team.
Yeah, maybe. I think part of that also depends on when the Pac-12, if they get
Oregon will pick up four losses in three games.
Pick up four losses in three games.
Yeah, no, that's how bad like I think them. Oregon is.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Maryland. They are a team that I'm kind of excited to watch because of their offensive firepower. You mentioned Rakim Jarrett. I also like Dante Demas Jr.
Don't steal my guy. I planted the flag on Demas.
You planted the seed, and it has flowered into a beautiful flower.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was really bad. Anyway, I've really enjoyed watching them. So I'm Maryland's a fun team. They're going to be a fun team to watch. I don't think they're going to be competitive in the East. Let's move over to the West, because this is probably a little bit more interesting as far as who we have on top, who we think's going to win it. I'd like to hear your thoughts. So actually, let me go first, because you went first in the last one. I'm actually picking Minnesota here, mainly because they have the best offense, in my opinion, in the West. You've got Captain Tanner Morgan returning at quarterback, and you've got some explosive receivers in Minnesota who were fantastic last year, and I think are really going to be able to really stretch just about any defense that they play. I think Wisconsin, with their quarterback being, with Cohn being out for who knows how long, losing Taylor, losing Quentin Cephas, there's a lot of questions along that offense. And while their defense is always really good and they have a good offensive line, I'm curious if they're going to be able to put up enough points to win enough games to threaten that. So I know maybe it's not the popular pick, but I'm taking Minnesota to win the West, Wisconsin, a close second, of course. And then, the rest of them there. I like Purdue after that, but it's all pretty balanced beyond that, and not necessarily in the highest. I'm a little bit further down in Nebraska than maybe some people who are hoping they're like a dark horse again after, man, they really were a lot of people's choices last year to make a big jump, and they never did. Scott Frost just hasn't been able to get going. Adrian Martinez has been a bit of a disappointment. So I know it's a senior year. Maybe they can finally get something going, but I don't really have much faith in them. How do you see the West? Who do you think wins it? And who are some of the players that you're looking at? Because, I mean, there's a lot of fun wide receivers coming out of the West.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota and Wisconsin's close. I don't think I can clearly put one of them way above the other. If I were going to right now rank it, I would tell you I probably still take Wisconsin. They're a little bit safer. But I do think Minnesota, if a team all of a sudden out of the West was going to become great, it's Minnesota. I don't particularly see that happening. Beyond those two teams, because we kind of know what they are, they're going to be very similar to what they've always been. Wisconsin has a lot of really, I don't want to say interesting players on this team, but you like Wisconsin has guys. They're going to be able to replace Jonathan Taylor because they've replaced every running back they've ever had.
Sure.
I just don't think you can get that far down. I honestly think the loss of their starting center from last year makes a bigger impact than Taylor, but that's because I don't think running backs matter all that much. So I actually sent this message to you and Travis the other day. Purdue's kind of, to me, looks like Ole Miss. Their offense is going to be spectacular because they have Rondale Moore and David Bell. And if people don't know what that means they might have two of the top eight wide receivers in the Big Ten. And they might very well be on passing very similar to what Minnesota was last year. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do. Iowa's Iowa. They're in a little bit of a weird spot this year. They had a weird offseason also. They're actually probably one of the teams that benefited the most from the shutdown because it all of a sudden rallied the team together, which is just weird because over the summer they were a mess. And then when everything
they had
shut
the firing
down,
firing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they were an absolute disaster. And then when the Big Ten canceled football, they were like, let's rally. We want to play. And it worked out. I'm a little higher in Nebraska. I mean, you said Adrian Martinez is a senior. He's actually only a junior. I think he has upside. I don't necessarily think he's amazing.
How many years has he been around? I feel like that Joker's been around forever.
He was a freshman in 2018. He just started immediately.
It feels like he's been around longer than that.
Yeah. I mean, it's because we had high hopes for him. We thought he was a Heisman Trophy candidate last year, and then he wasn't. Northwestern's going to be boring. I don't know what to say beyond that. They're going to be boring. And then Illinois, we'll see what they look like this weekend against Wisconsin. If they can hang it close in that game, maybe we have some hopes for Illinois. But Lovie Smith kind of turned them into the transfer portal team last year. And for as much as that's a good move in the short term, it does kind of make it difficult to have long-term success. And
yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they look like this weekend.
Yeah, no, I think this weekend's going to tell us a lot. I mean, we've got quite a few big games in the Big Ten. I'm really obviously excited about Minnesota, Michigan. I think that's going to be a big one to decide if I'm right or wrong about this Minnesota team. So if they go out and lay an egg this first week, that's going to be a big problem. We'll get into some more of these teams as we go through the episode. Let's get into some of the big news items here. We've got two quarterbacks that are not going to be playing this week. It looks like Devin Leary's out for much longer than that, NC State's quarterback. So they're going to be going back to Hockman, and that could be a bit of a problem for them. They've kind of been playing over their head a little bit, or at least more than what people were expecting. They're in the top 25 for the first time in what seems like a long time, but they're losing him. And then the other big news is Miles Brennan is listed as doubtful right now for LSU. It looks like he probably will not be playing. LSU's got some issues now. They're going to be turning it over to some freshman quarterbacks. What's the big item here for you with these two quarterbacks? What do you think that makes? How do you think that shapes the landscape moving forward?
I think I care more about Leary being out. NC State's a decent team. They've been kind of potent on offense. I don't have a ton to say. I've made my feelings pretty clear about Miles Brennan. I don't think he's anything special. I think he was bottom half of the SEC in a year when the SEC is very bad at quarterback. I think that it's probably better for them in a lost season to move on from a quarterback that they know isn't the answer. So if you're an LSU fan, you're probably going to lose one extra game because Miles Brennan's stability isn't there, but I don't think you should be that upset. You probably should be starting to look for your next guy anyway.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that loss might come as early as this week against South Carolina, but we'll talk about that later. A couple of opt-outs that we should probably talk about. Speaking of the Big Ten, Nico Collins, Michigan's wide receiver, opted out. Man,
they're out a while ago. It
was only official though this week. I know he hadn't been around, and
Nico Collins isn't. I mean, I like Nico Collins. He's a big body receiver that has gotten a lot of volume. I actually think there's probably some, like, in rookie drafts next year, he'll probably become like a trendy sleeper because he had a lot of volume and people won't have seen him for a year. There were a lot of people who really liked him. I think he's kind of just another guy when it comes to the college football landscape, because he doesn't, as good as he is, he's sort of proven he isn't a game changing receiver. I think that there are plenty of athletes on this Michigan team to replace him, but I would say early on, don't be surprised if Michigan's receiving, I mean, if Michigan's passing game, largely because they're going to a new quarterback off a shortened offseason, or extended, but a tumultuous offseason, with a younger receiving group. Yeah, I mean, expect them to be a little bit iffy out the gates.
I mean, they were a little bit iffy all of last year anyway. I mean, their offense was pretty terrible at times.
Yeah, but they did switch systems right before the year, and it wasn't really until probably week 4 or 5 that they started that. For as much as we want to rag on Shea Patterson, if you look at the game logs, he actually started to kind of make a turn at one point, and there was legitimate thoughts that he was, like, respectable. He wasn't, but whatever.
Thanks for clarifying.
He wasn't respectable, but the system made him look okay. So is what it is. I think Michigan's offense will probably be kind of rough at the beginning of the year. And hopefully they're smart and just give the ball to Zach Charbonnet. And we get to see what he is capable of, because he's our only hope for 2022.
Yeah. Puka Williams, speaking of running backs, he opted out earlier this week, I'm pretty sure. So running back for Kansas, I'm guessing he wants to have nothing to do with Kansas. They look terrible. I don't really know a whole lot more about this other than that. But
He made an impact as a freshman, and he's kind of my issue with Puka is kind of my issue with a lot of these inefficient running backs. Everyone wants to sit here and just immediately place the blame on, oh, his offensive line is trash. Oh, he didn't have anything around him. Ah, blah, blah, blah. And my issue, and I ever see that, is I'm like, cool. There's bad offensive lines in the NFL, and unless he's behind all of a sudden one that is just is substantially better than the defensive line, you're going to have to create your own yardage, and I don't necessarily know if he's a create-his-own-yardage kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a day 3 pick in the NFL draft, because I do think he's going to declare, just because I think COVID is going to push a lot more guys to declare for the draft and try and get to the NFL as quickly as possible, rather than try and sit in the transfer portal for a year. So,
right.
Yeah. I think he's a guy. He'll be either a late day 3 pick, undrafted free agent. He'll get on a roster during the preseason. And hopefully I am wrong, and hopefully he can create stuff for himself. I was high on him before the year, hoping that all of a sudden we'd see a 6 yard per carry guy. I don't think he's that. I think he's similar to the way I felt about a guy like David Montgomery. I think that when you see the inefficiency at running back or in his average carries, it's probably real.
Right. He does do special teams as well, so maybe he can make a name for himself in special teams once he gets to the NFL. We'll see. But I do hope that I know he opted out because his mother's dealing with some health issues. So hopefully everything's okay there and he's able to help his family and take care of things. But as far as being the running back for Kansas, he won't be doing that anymore. The last kind of news item is one that you mentioned earlier, Journey Brown, most likely out for the year with an undisclosed medical condition. We're not exactly sure what that is. A real bummer, though. Journey Brown is just such a fun player, a guy that we have been talking about probably before most other people were talking about him. We were getting excited for him on this podcast, especially myself and Jordan. I know you were always a little bit behind, but his Devy stock
is the word you were looking for.
Yeah. His Devy stock skyrocketed this last off season. And so much so that I was no longer the high guy on Journey Brown, but he unfortunately won't be playing for a while, it looks like.
Yeah. And it is a bummer. I will say, for as much as I poo-poo him, people around the program were really high on him and thought that he had the potential for a huge season, that this was going to be his bell cow year. Remember, if you listened to the show a few years ago, we had the co-host was named as Kyle Pollack. He was actually within the Penn State program. He had Journey Brown as his number 2 running back overall in this class. That's how special he thought he was, above Juba Hubbard. So Yeah, I mean, it is a bummer. Hopefully he's, first things first, hopefully he's okay. And hopefully he's able to play football again. That would be great to see. But first things first, be healthy.
All right, Matt, let's, I don't have a whole lot to talk about this week. I feel like we've covered a lot of it. I'm excited for Big Ten football, but I don't know. I know you've got something on your chest that you'd like to get off.
I have two things that I want to say. So I have now come to this like spot where I am staring at two receivers on Alabama who have basically opposite profiles. And that is Devonta Smith and Jaylen Waddle. And I love both of them, but I'm trying to figure out how to rank these two. And I'm curious on your opinion. So last week, Jaylen Waddle got 7 targets for 161 yards and a touchdown. Devonta Smith got 12 targets and then turned that into 167 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I'm going to be blunt with you. I have absolutely no idea what to think of these guys, because this seems to be the pattern is Smith is getting volume in a way that Waddle isn't. And Waddle is becoming the big play guy, which is why if you look at their yardage versus the receptions, Smith has a ton more receptions, but Waddle is either right by him in yardage or like very close. So I'm just curious your opinion on this one. And that is if right now what they've done this year, which of those two like profiles do you prefer?
It's hard for me because especially like, I mean, they play Georgia, which is a fantastic defense, of course. But other than that, they haven't been up against these stalwart defenses. So sometimes it's hard to tell, okay, why is Smith getting so open all the time? Is he just another great route runner like a Jerry Judy right. type? Yeah. Whereas with Waddle, it's a lot easier to see how he's getting open. He's also a good route runner, but he's got another gear. He's going at everyone else's top speed, and then all of a sudden he cranks it up another notch and just accelerates past everyone. So for me, like, it's easier as someone who isn't a scout, and I'm not like a Matt Harmon type who can track all these routes and see everyone's like grayed out everyone's route running abilities. To me, Jaylen Waddle is just he just is a different level type player. So for me, it's him. They're both like, to your point, they're both exceptional. And the one who has a better career in the NFL, I think, is going to be determined by which one ends up with a better quarterback and a better system. But because to me, like, they're very, very close as far as just the level of talent that they have. And yeah, they're both phenomenal.
I think I'm with you on that. I do like the volume I'm seeing that Smith get this year. I mean, it's really hard to argue the target share he's been seeing. But I think I'm with you on Waddle. And honestly, I'm making it. It's becoming increasingly difficult to keep him behind Bateman for me. Whereas I love Rashad Bateman. I love Rashad Bateman's like prospect profile. If you look at it, his production is just insane. But now that we're seeing, when Waddle isn't there with two first round wide receivers, he's creating, and he's the guy that has been so athletic and so multidimensional that he's returning punts for him. And he's always done so much, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to even have him as low as I have him. And that's, I think we're in agreement. We're seeing him on the field just make plays in a way that you just don't see from a lot of guys.
Yeah, like right now, I'm just looking at my ranks. I have him as my wide receiver 5. I'm going to have to change that before we do our Devy Summit.
Yeah, doesn't that feel it?
It's just not right.
It feels like that's low. And it's weird to say that top 5 in this ridiculous class might be low, but I feel like I'm low.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's I think that's a very good point, because he definitely is next level. And someone that I'd moved him ahead of George Pickens earlier, like after like week 2 or something like that, because he already is more than what we were hoping Pickens would become, if that makes sense.
Yeah. He definitely has a natural athleticism. And you know what? You and I, we don't have a natural athleticism. And thanks to our natural lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. And this football season will be different. And Pepsi's here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. You know me, I'm not a huge NFL guy. I'm a college guy. I cannot wait until this weekend seeing Justin Fields line up in shotgun, because he's not going to be up under center. Line up, get that first snap, and let's just say he goes deep to someone random like Chris Olave for a touchdown pass. I can't wait to see that. And Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for people who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching.
Man, I'm excited as well. I actually already have stocked the fridge for the weekend. I've got lots of Pepsi and Mountain Dew in there, and a couple of kids that are just waiting for the weekend so that they can rip into some of those as well, because I don't let them drink soda during the week. So yeah, we're really excited as well. It's going to be great. Before we do go ahead and look at week 8, let's talk about week 7 real quick. This week was not great, let's be honest. Matt, you were 1-3 this week on your locks, 2-3 on the regular games. So your overall on locks is 11-10-2. So you've still got that winning number there. And then on the regular season, you're 14-16. I went 3-4 in my locks. I really felt screwed over this week. We'll get into that. I'm 12-6 on locks for the season, but 15-15 for 15 on the regular slated game. So still okay there. No, it's not okay. That's not good enough. Not near good enough. But this is another week to get better. Let's look back at what you did for your locks and kind of walk us through some of those, will you, Matt?
Remember when I was good at this? That was fun. So I thought Clemson would be nice to Georgia Tech, and I took the under 64.5. They were not nice, and if you looked at the halftime score, I almost lost this game at half. And they
it was funny.
They had 54 at half or something silly. It was gross.
I had mentioned last week, I was like, man, Clemson might get that on their own, and you're like, yeah, that's my only fear. And sure enough, but they had their punter playing quarterback for the fourth quarter, which was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, credit to them. They did what they were supposed to do. They went out and beat a team badly. Pitt, Miami under 48. Honestly, I felt like I felt very okay about this, particularly when I saw when Kenny Pickett was officially ruled out. Miami was sloppy. It just seemed like they got a few, they finished drives that they wouldn't typically finish. And Pitt's defense is turning more and more into fraudulent, and I'm kind of disappointed in them. Louisiana.
You only missed that one by two, though. The total that you took it at was under 48, and it hit at 50. So you were very close.
I didn't feel like when you're talking about these low total games, there is a chance for these like one or two plays really flip the game. And for me, there were just a couple of times Pitt scored in the second half after being completely useless in the first half. So whatever. Louisiana Tech Marshall. I watched none of this game. I don't want to lie to people. Marshall's really good, and they pretty much handled him the whole game. Lost UTEP and Southern Miss on my card. It got postponed. Happens. I feel like that would have been a win. I should count that as a win.
Yes.
And then Louisville and Notre Dame. I said that Louisville would have explosive plays and keep this game close. I didn't think this would turn into the biggest snooze fest of a game of all time. I'm mad at myself for not taking the under. I am happy I got bullied into the pick. So Louisville covered in a game where Notre Dame won 12-7. So win.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. The game I was most confident on was Alabama -4 at, and that was, wasn't in the bag from the get-go. We'll talk a little bit about that game in a minute here. But by the end of it, it was looking very lovely. I took BYU -4.5 at Houston. They took care of business 43-26. That one was good. UCF Memphis game made me really, really angry. UCF was up so much. Like, they were up by a ton. I think they were up by like 21 points at one point in the fourth quarter, and they ended up letting Memphis come back, and Memphis won 50-49. I was really upset about that one. Ole Miss at Arkansas. Ole Miss, again, like when you throw six interceptions, it's going to be hard to win many games. But even with that, like even with all those turnovers, they had the ball with like 3 minutes left, and they just needed to drive down and score a touchdown to win. And instead, Matt Corral threw his sixth interception for a pick six. And I was just furious. I'm not really sure why they didn't take him out and put a different quarterback in, but regardless,
JRP wouldn't have made this.
I was shocked that Corral or Matty C, whatever you want to call him. I was so mad that he was still in there. Probably the game that I was just most off on, like the UCF and Ole Miss game were frustrating because they could have hit, but the one that was just outrageous was UNC -13.5 at Florida State, and they just flat out lost 28-31. I also had the over on this one at 63.5. It ended at 59. What made me upset about that is UNC was driving at the end of the game. Was like a 4th-and-8. They had to convert it to keep going and then maybe get me that cover. And the running back Williams just dropped the football on 4th and 10. It would have been a conversion. So that was a bummer. UMass at Georgia Southern. The line was 31.5. They ended up winning 41-0. That was another one I felt really confident about, and that one obviously paid off.
I think UMass just scheduled a second game, by the way, so you might get another chance to bet on them or bet.
Yeah,
I'm so excited on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to look for it and already bet it, because that number is just going to keep going the wrong direction.
Yeah, they're atrocious.
Yeah. So let's look at some of the other games from the weekend that we talked about. Let's start off with that Pitt at Miami game. The line was 13.5. Pitt ended up losing 19-31.
Yeah, you're bad at math because you initially called this a loss on our board. And no, that is what we call a solid W. Derek King was fine. The reason I sit here and go back to this and say my analysis on this game was right, and I swear it's not to be super defensive. Pitt's defense pretty much held the running game in check. Jalen Knighton was the leading non-Derek King rusher with 25 yards. Cam Harris was 12 or 24. Don Chaney, yeah, I think that's his name, Don. Whatever. 5 for 18. And then Derek King was 11 for 32 on this win, including a 22-yard run. It was that all of a sudden his passing game was just like way more explosive than they'd been. He was 16 for 31 with 4 touchdowns. So every fourth pass he threw was a touchdown. He also threw 2 interceptions in this. Every fourth completion was a touchdown. That shouldn't happen. This Pitt defense is actually had been pretty respectable, and it seems like their defensive line still made life miserable for Miami. I think we were on the right. I think we took the right side, even with the news with Pickett being injured and them playing Yellen at quarterback. It kind of what the our reasoning behind this was: the total's really low, meaning we think this is going to be a low scoring affair. And do we think Miami is just so much better that they're going to be the only one scoring? Turns out they kind of were. But then Pitt managed to like do just enough in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And quick question. We've been especially Travis had been kind of high. We were on his show and he was pretty high on Cameron Harris. And he just has had a couple bad weeks in a row here. Do you think that the hype got
another guy?
I was going to say, did the hype get a little bit overblown? Yes. And maybe
I told you guys this when you were doing it. The problem with running back is that whenever there is a void in running back prospects and there isn't this superstar, you try and turn these guys into superstar when they have one game. And Harris had that. Kyren Williams had that. And thus far on both of those, we've been quick to run and like put them in our top 60 and be like, yeah, this is a guy I'm all in. And then like 2 weeks later, you're like, wow, he's had back-to-back games with 40 yards rushing. Why was I all in? Oh, he beat up on Florida State, who's terrible. And
I still think, for what it's worth, I still think Kyron's pretty
good. Kyren isn't bad. I just don't. The problem I have is like with both of them, why did we rush to think that these guys were going to be anywhere near the second round of rookie drafts next year? The only way that happens is if they get day two capital, and I don't see either one of them in that range. So, yeah, I mean, Cam Harris isn't the guy. The one really big name, the one prospect we all need to be watching from this game, it was my player to watch, and that's Jordan Addison. Had 13 targets in the game, converted 8 of them into receptions for 147 yards.
Yeah,
he had a freshman. That dude has the potential to be special.
And with a backup quarterback, too. So, yeah, very, very incredible, very special stuff. Let's move on. Ole Miss at Arkansas again.
We shouldn't spend too long in this because it'll bring a lot of anger out in you.
Yep. Well, the line was 1.5. And like I said, they lost 21-33. But as I also said, they were down 21-26 with 5 minutes to go. With 3 minutes and 18 seconds is when Coral threw his 6th interception for a pick 6, which was just so incredibly frustrating. But Jerry Neely was a guy I was watching. He had 23 carries for 112 yards and a touchdown. On top of that, he had 2 receptions for 10 yards. So he's not really getting it done in the passing game as much as maybe I was hoping in this offense. But he seems to be really carving out a nice role for himself. Snoop Connor, who's been getting some of the work as well, only had 15 carries for 40 yards. So I think the separation is pretty evident in the talent level between those. I think Snoop's still good, but Jerrion Ely's really the RB1 on that team. I did want to mention as well, because we do keep talking about Elijah Moore, this was his third consecutive game with double-digit targets. He had 11 receptions for 113 and one. So
I also feel like I need to mention this other guy because both you and Travis tried to bully me into pushing him on my rankings. Yeboah, one target, zero receptions, yeah. 0 yards. I get it. It's fun when a dude is doing awesome for a minute, but we do need to like cool our jets sometimes. He might be good. He might have games, but this is not the stat line that you see on a guy if he is a legitimate NFL prospect.
That's fair. That is fair. Let's move on. UCF at Memphis. I watched a lot of this game because I had UCF minus 3.5.
Oh, it was fun. There were 99 points scored.
Yeah.
Why did you ever turn this game off?
I was so mad. I'm losing my voice. I'm so mad. When they were up, they were up 49-37. They were up 43-29. They were up 35-14. Like, they were up the entire game. And somehow UCF still managed to lose in large part because of the running back that you were watching.
Yeah, I mean, Rodriguez-Clark is quality. The reason I mentioned him is Memphis has, over the last few years, Memphis has found a way to scheme that running backs are able to do kind of whatever they want. And Rodriguez-Clark just appears to be next in line. He was 21 for 112. Just kind of did what he was supposed to. He didn't get in the end zone, which bummed me out because I had him in a lot of DFS lineups, but whatever. Had a solid game, and I mean, really, this was a battle between two quarterbacks in this. Brady White, 34 for 50 for 486 and 6.
Unbelievable.
And then your player to watch, Dylan Gabriel, 35 for 49, 601 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, you really can't put this on anyone. The issue at hand is just, at the end of this game, Memphis was still kicking, and UCF had a couple of opportunities to close out the game, and they didn't. They missed a field goal that would have won the game with a minute left. This game was crazy, and yeah, I mean, this is why this matchup is fun, because it's two offenses that you're going to have a difficult time stopping.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, as insane as those numbers were for those quarterbacks, they both also had a rushing touchdown. So just absolutely insane. And yeah, I was actually surprised that what they went for a 45-yard field goal. I thought they'd just keep pushing it and trying to, I know they were running out of time, but let's move on to that North Carolina game that we mentioned earlier. I think this was one of the shockers of the weekend. North Carolina favored by 13.5, end up losing by 3, 28-31. See, I'm not terrible at math, but yeah, I was shocked by this one. I was just blown away. I didn't think, I mean, I had mentioned like Jordan Travis like being decent, and that's why I was taking the over, but I mean, he didn't even do that well. He was only 8 for 19 passing. Now, he did have 107 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns, so I mean, that's how they're gonna do this. But UNC just took so long to get started. They were down 24-0 at one point. They ended up scoring right before the half, which helped out a little bit, but then they gave up another touchdown really quick. So they were down 31-7 at halftime. They just could not get back in. The over didn't hit for me because FSU didn't score in the second half. That really pissed me off. Javonte Williams was the guy that I was watching, and he had a fine game. Again, he had that one drop that cost them the potential win, but he had 120.
He had such a solid game.
He had 119 rushing yards and a touchdown, and he had 67 yards and a touchdown with 3 receptions. Yeah,
so you're saying 180 yards and 2 touchdowns is not a good enough game?
He didn't get me the over if he makes that catch.
I'm just... So... Javonte Williams was awesome. I think that's a guy that actually, who now we're starting to see as a legitimate Debbie prospect. I don't know if he's going to get the draft capital to be super meaningful, but he is a guy that you definitely need to know. Yeah. No, this game's silly. Because if North Carolina wins this game, where are they ranked?
Like, they're like Carolina, number 3 or 4.
Yeah, they're probably right there next to Notre Dame, maybe higher than Notre Dame. So in that 3-7 range. Now they're 14, is it just 14? The fact that they only dropped to 14 is silly to me. They should have dropped to like 20. Florida State's one of the worst teams in college football. This was so honestly, what this showed me is all the fears that we saw from that Virginia Tech game and all the things we've seen so far. about North Carolina's defense just really not being good enough are real. They turn it on in moments and they're fine, but that is a real reason to be concerned because Florida State is not this high-powered offense. Moving to Travis seems to be the smart move. They definitely seem to be a little more fluid on offense with him than they were with Blackman. They're not playing from behind as much. I do wonder what it's going to do to the receiving, the receivers on that team, because I think running is probably going to have to turn into a big part of this game for him. So it'll be interesting to see if the receiving numbers start to plummet. He ended up with a fine stat line, but you have to be a little bit disappointed in Sam Howell. Yes, he went 20 for 36 for 374 and 3 touchdowns and 1 interception. That's a fine final line. The one thing I am going to put a little bit on him is that this is their first 6 drives of the game. They went 5 plays for 18 yards, punt. 3 plays for 8 yards, punt. 7 plays for 34 yards, punt. 8 plays for 39 yards, punt. 11 plays for 50 yards, turnover on downs, and then 3 plays for 73 yards and a pick. If you are supposed to be the quarterback savior to this program and you're going to be the guy that is turning them from a middle-of-the-road team to like, hey, this is a quiet contender, you can't start with 6 straight drives with no points. To be clear, that the play where when they go 3 for 73 and get an interception, that's sort of bad luck. But when you start to get down the field and you have those real point scoring opportunities, those are when you need to lock in, because I mean, they score any points on any of those 6 drives, this game flips.
Right. And I'll be honest, Howell's a guy I've moved down my board over the last couple of weeks. Not just this game, but he's had a lot of underwhelming performances. He often looks like the moment's too big for him. And if that's happening at this level, man, I can't imagine what's going to happen once he gets to the NFL.
I think that the class of 2022 quarterbacks that we have been so high on entering this year with Howell, Rattler, Kadon Slovis, and Jaden Daniels, at least 2 of those guys have given you a lot more reasons to have questions about them than they have made you confident in them being because realistically, in a super flex Devy league next year, if you're going into a non-depleted Devy league and you're going to start off your draft, those probably would be 2 of the top 10 picks.
Oh yeah, easy.
And are you confident taking Sam Howell as the 101 in your Devy league?
Absolutely not.
I think that's where we stand right now. So we got Pac-12 coming back soon. Let's hope my boy Jaden Daniels goes out and lights up the world.
You said Chuck's name wrong, but that's okay. Let's move on to Georgia, Alabama.
Why am I thinking that the backup quarterback for Oregon?
Okay. Georgia loses 24-41 to Alabama. We talked about this one a little bit. Georgia was shut out in the second half. That was the big story. I will be honest, when our boy Bennett threw that 82-yard touchdown to Cook, I got a little nervous. I was like, man, maybe this defense isn't going to be able to do enough to keep Georgia from scoring. But that quickly changed, and Alabama was able to do what they needed to do to get the pretty comfortable win when all was said and done.
So they had a very real chance to close out Alabama, or at least make this a game where Alabama was going to be put in a position where they were very uncomfortable. They came out the half and they were leading. They had back-to-back drives where they punted. Whatever, it happens. Everyone can't immediately just rule out a team because they have back-to-back punts. Then they get a stop on Alabama, and then they went down the field and they threw the timing on this wrong, but whatever. I don't care. They go down and they throw an interception very close to the goal line. And that's about when the game was over, because that was the last time where they were really going to have an opportunity to put Alabama on their heels, because Alabama is not a team that you can miss opportunities like that. Their offense is too good for as good as you. This is sort of similar to when they played LSU. You can't miss your chances. with a team that is this explosive and a team that is this good, you know that 24 points is not going to be enough. It doesn't matter how good your defense is. There's going to be a broken play. There's going to be a Waddle just runs by somebody, and their quarterback is good enough to exploit that. And I don't think you can be disappointed if you're a Georgia fan, because I think you should have expected this type of outcome, because you are playing a walk-on quarterback. And when you're playing a walk-on quarterback against this level of offense, you need kind of a lot to fall in place. And you got quite a few things to go your way early. You got a lot of stops. I think you can be happy with this defense, and you can sit here and say that you are one of the, heck, they're still probably the fourth best team in the country with Ohio State returning.
Yeah, maybe for now. I mean, I thought if Stetson Bennett's their quarterback, he had a fine game from a yardage, like 269 and two.
That's the issue. Right now, there's not a lot of good teams in college football. And when you look at Georgia, Georgia has one unit that is special. Their defense is special enough that they held a very good Alabama team to, in the first half, first quarter, an interception, one touchdown, then three straight punts. Then they had field goal, touchdown, and then they got to half. That's a successful half against Alabama. You forced three punts and a turnover. Great. There are not a lot of teams in the country that are going to force that.
I just don't think Stetson Bennett can beat anyone. He completed less than 50% of his passes. He had three interceptions. And if he's still their quarterback, I don't want this team in the playoff, because they're not going to be able to keep up.
I think their path to the playoff is very difficult regardless. I think that they're not going. If Ohio State comes up with one loss, they're not getting in over Ohio State, assuming Ohio State plays enough football games, because I would say best case scenario is they somehow beat this Alabama team in the SEC championship, and I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, we need to move on, because we are not even halfway through our show. Oh, we're about halfway through our show, but we're already at like an hour. Not really, but let's take a quick break. Let's listen to our boys at RotoViz, and they got a nice promotion for you. So check that out, and we'll be back on the other side.
What's up, listeners? This is Curtis Patrick. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. You are the absolute best audience in the business, and I know it. As a special thank you, I'm offering 10% off your next RotoViz subscription. Just use code 2020RVRadio at checkout. That's right. Go to rotoviz.com, click subscribe, and enter code 2020RVRadio at checkout for 10% off. You can even extend your subscription. Oh, and one more thing. If you haven't ever done it, please rate and review the podcast you're listening to right now on Apple Podcasts. It's really easy. It only takes like 10, 15 seconds. Just do it. We'd love to hear your feedback. Now, back to the show.
All right, we are back. Week 8 preview. Let's start off with Oklahoma at TCU. TCU plus 7.
I do not have a feel for this game, but
it's actually 6.5. I lied to you. Sorry.
Oh, it's 6.5. It's dumb. That flips my pick. I'm going to take Oklahoma. I do think Oklahoma is going to get the win. I just don't feel super confident. I liked the push potential.
You can find either line that you like.
I'm still taking OU. For as much as I want to pick TCU, their path to victory is challenging. It requires a lot of mistakes by OU, and I think OU's win over Texas might turn into a springboard opportunity. And hopefully, Rattler calms his poop and doesn't mess up. The player I'm watching in this game is freshman Zach Evans. He's a really talented running back. He was for much of the process last year, he was the number one running back in the country. He had a weird recruiting cycle, so there was a lot of like question marks around him, but he seemed to be on the straight and narrow at TCU. If he gets an opportunity to see the field, he's really talented, and I want to see that happen.
Yeah. I will be watching Rambo. I'm also on OU side. I'd just like to see him kind of see if he can start to separate himself in this wide receiver core for Oklahoma. So far, it's kind of been all over the place. Part of that, I think, is Spencer Rattler running around a lot and throwing it to whoever he can find. But we'll see what can happen. I also don't feel great about this one. Earlier in the week, I think the line was up by was up for 8. And I was leaning TCU, but now that it's dropped down, I've moved over to the OU side. Next up, we've got the game that you're probably most excited about. Actually, not probably. You're definitely most excited about. And that is your Ohio State Buckeyes versus Nebraska. The line I'm seeing right now is 26. How are you feeling?
So I'm taking Ohio State, one, because of obligation, but I have no confidence in that pick. There are reports coming out of the Ohio State team that they are very unlikely to run the score up on this team because of all the goodwill that was built with Nebraska.
You really believe that?
I do. I think that there is a, I don't think the players are going out there with this like, hey, you guys helped us get football back, I feel good. But I think Ryan Day is much more likely to pull the starters quickly in this game. That's the other thing. I think if Ohio State is up big after like midway through the second quarter, we might not see Justin Fields again. Just because I think that with COVID, with the shortened season, with everything out there, with no bye week, you kind of want to get your starters out as quick as possible. And I think that might be the reason. If I am going to play this game, I'm going to take the first half on this one, which I haven't looked up a line yet. I'll look that up while you talk. But the first half is probably the play I like the best on this game. And the player I'm watching, there's this guy by the name of Chris Olave. I don't know if I've ever talked about him on the show, but I'm watching
him. I've heard of him. Yeah, I'm actually, I wrote on the show doc Nebraska just to get you riled up, but it sounds like you actually weren't. I actually am totally taking Ohio State. I think they cover this. But the guy I'm watching is Wandale Robinson for Nebraska. I think we've talked a lot about a lot of the Ohio State players. I'm curious in what Robinson can do. He's a sophomore this year. Last year, he did a lot. He had 88 rushes. He had 40 receptions. He had 5 total touchdowns. He had almost 1,000 total scrimmage yards. Well, like 800 total scrimmage yards. But I'm curious to see what Nebraska can do to get him going this year. He's someone that we've, in the Devy community, been talking about for a while now. Well, not a while now, but a year now. And I'm curious what they can do with him. It'll be interesting to see how he kind of fits in this offense. I'm also curious with Ohio State, with them losing so many players on defense. I know that you guys just restock, but, you know, 3 first-round picks on defense, at least 2. I'm curious what's going to happen. Maybe Wandale can break loose for a couple big plays. But overall, I think Ohio State wins this fairly easily.
Yeah.
What's that first half line?
It's 13.5, and you'll hear that number again.
Yeah, that's you can put that on my locks as well. Woo, that sounds sexy. Number 2, Alabama is at Tennessee. I was surprised that the line in this one was only 21. So I am all over Alabama. I'll be watching Najee Harris. I was very excited about what he was able to do. And Tennessee's been giving up a lot of yards everywhere. Who are you watching in this game, and who are you picking in this game?
I'm picking Alabama because I think I have to pick Alabama because I don't want to pick against Alabama at this point. I'm watching Eric Gray. He's the running back for Tennessee. He's been in a little bit of a timeshare with Ty Johnson. But last week he started to get separation. He actually accounted for like 50% of their yards against UK. I think he's really good. I think he's a talented player and I'm excited to see him.
Yeah. He's someone that you've been talking about a little bit, with Travis and I, saying that we needed to, show him a little bit more respect.
The fact that Travis has him is like the 60th best player in Devy drafts is stupid. That dude's like a fourth round. He's the third to fourth round pick.
So if you guys want to hear a little bit more fire between Travis and Matt, we're going to be doing our Devy Summit ranking podcast this upcoming weekend. It's for sure going to be on Travis's College to Canton stream. I might see if I can get it on our stream as well. But they'll be going at it quite a bit back and forth.
But for everyone who hasn't listened to that show much, Travis is very organized and very like tries to keep like an organized show doc. When we get to Eric Gray, when we get to Chris Olave, I'm turning that thing into a brawl. It's going to be a fight. It will be talking over each other. It will be like the first presidential debate. He is wrong, wrong, wrong.
I can't wait. Next, we've got South Carolina at LSU. I think LSU still ranked? That can't be right. Oh, I guess they didn't play last week. But yeah, the line is 6.5 is what I'm seeing. You can get it at 6 or 6.5. Who are you taking in this one and who are you watching?
I have no confidence don't take my play on this one. I'm taking LSU. I continue to think LSU is a really talented team, and I don't think that losing Miles Brennan changes them dramatically. I want their defense to show up and not be hot garbage. I would like Derek Stingley to look like the player that we all thought he was going to. I'm taking LSU, and it's like hoping. The player I'm watching is the guy that I think might get shadowed, or might be, yeah, might have Derek Stingley shadowing him, and that's Shai Smith. He kind of torched everyone last week, and he made a funny Instagram post where he called a kid his son and told everyone to at him.
Oh, that's fun. I am taking South Carolina. I've been quite impressed with them. I think they're actually a pretty good football team, and I don't know if LSU is. I know LSU is a lot more talent, but giving me almost a touchdown here. I know South Carolina's on the road, but they're trying to work in a new quarterback. I know you're not high on Brennan, but it's still a change. South Carolina's been pretty consistent so far, and really played over my expectations for them. But the player I'm watching is wide receiver for LSU, Terrace Marshall. He had a monster game last week, went 8 for 122 and 2 touchdowns. So someone who I have quite a few Debbie shares of. So I'm watching him for selfish reasons. Let's move on to state versus state. We've got Iowa State versus Oklahoma State, two top 25 teams. Who do you got in this one? Oklahoma State should be getting back Spencer Sanders, although Coach Gundy said that he probably will be playing both quarterbacks in this game, which surprised me a little bit. But who do you got? The line is 3.5, Oklahoma State.
I have Iowa State. I don't really know why. Screw that. I'm switching it. Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's defense is the best unit on the field. They're actually probably a top 4 to 5 defense in the country. Their offensive line continues to struggle, so I don't necessarily see them blowing anyone out. Sanders will need to use his legs. For the player I'm watching, I guess it has to be Spencer Sanders, only because we kind of need to see what he is. He's an interesting player that I think is fully capable of leading a team to a playoff run and fully capable of leading them to a Big 12 championship this year, but I just don't know what that team is right now. So I'm watching him.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what he can do. People were really hoping that he would have a big breakout year, and obviously that's been put on hold with the injury. I'm also on Oklahoma State on this one. If the line was a little bit more, if it was like 5, I'd probably be on Iowa State because I think this line is spot on. But I think Oklahoma State's just a little bit better. Like you said, their defense has looked really, really good. If their offensive line can come together and just create a little bit of room for Chuba Hubbard, I think he'll be able to be a difference maker. But the guy I'm actually watching is Breece Hall for Iowa State. He's a player who's probably moved up my boards the most just because I wasn't super high on him. I didn't actually watch much of him last year, but I've seen quite a bit of him this year. I've been really, really impressed. I'm curious what he'll be able to do against this good defense. He's just a very powerful and quick runner. Really excited to watch him play. But I am leaning Oklahoma State on this one. Our final one is one of the fun games of the weekend, I think. Some Big Ten action. We've got number 20 Michigan at number 25 Minnesota. Minnesota +3. Where are you leaning?
I'm taking Minnesota. I mentioned it before that Michigan is breaking in a new quarterback and quite a few new receivers. They're just seemingly a little bit inconsistent, and I'm not really... I don't know what to make of this Michigan team. I have a feeling that this could be another one of those Michigan teams that starts off very slow and loses a game early. And Michigan might be in a similar boat to like LSU, where people have some expectations and then they turn out as a 3-4 loss team. So I'm going to take Minnesota. I would probably actually take the money line in this spot. So yeah.
Yeah. More on that later. I'm also on Minnesota. I think they're very good. Obviously, I picked them to win their conference. I always forget if they're in the East or the West because my geography is awful. I took them to win the West, and I think they're just such a I think they have a dynamic offense. I'm excited to watch them play. I know they are bringing in a new offensive coordinator this year, so that could be interesting. But the player I'm watching is Captain Tanner Morgan. Curious to see what he can do. Rashad Bateman obviously is a dynamic weapon. I'm curious if who will be able to take that Tyler Johnson role in the offense. And
I will say the other person to watch on that offense that doesn't really get as much love is a player by the name of Chris Ottman-Bell. He is a very talented receiver. I don't think he will ever be the volume hog that Tyler Johnson was, but I think between the two of Bateman and him, you will see an offense that doesn't really skip too much of a beat.
And he flashed a bit last year, I remember, because he was a wide receiver three on the team, but he looked really good. Before we jump into our locks, I just want to let you know about Bet Online. We talk about them a lot because they are absolutely awesome. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head over to Bet Online today and take advantage of all their great sign up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BlueWire at betonline.ag. That's BlueWire. It's all one word. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Matthew, where are you placing your first bet? Which one do you feel the most confident about this week?
So I'm going to actually, screw it. I'm going to go with the one that I already hinted at and already said I'm doing. Ohio State is 13.5 point favorites in the first half. This is going to be one of the few times where you have to allow me to do this because I'm so confident in this. Ohio State is incredibly explosive on offense this year. The one question about them is going to be defensively, but Nebraska also has their own questions. So I think this actually turns into a kind of a shootout in the first half because with both defenses trying to figure stuff out. And I do think that Ohio State's offense, we kind of know what we're getting. Worst case scenario is Justin Fields runs for his life and does really good things, or they give the ball to two running backs behind what might be the best offensive line in football. I have pretty much no doubt that they're going to be winning by 14 points or more at halftime. So I will be locking in Ohio State minus 13.5 in the first half.
Sorry, I didn't hear a word you just said because I was busy pulling up Bet Online Sportsbook and placing a bet because I'm following you on that one. Unfortunately, the payout's minus 137, which isn't great, but I think it's money in the bag. I think that's a great pick. Really, really like that. In fact, I am stealing it from you.
Add it on your list. It's totally legit. We can both be on that pick. We can have some agreement.
That's a first right there. I'm just copying and pasting it because I want credit for that one too, even though it's your brainchild, but my money is on it too. My first one is App State minus 10.5 at Arkansas State. I think that's a Thursday night game. I'm also taking the over 64.5. App State, I know they disappointed me earlier this year. They're probably one of the teams I swore I would never bet on. But I think they're going to be able to run the ball better against this Arkansas State defense. I think the number for these two teams is fairly low. I'm more confident on the over than I am on App State minus 10.5, but I feel good enough that I'm taking both of them.
I like it. Another game we just talked about. I do think there's a pretty solid chance that Minnesota pulls the outright upset. Regardless, I think that game is very close. I'm going to take Minnesota, and I actually found it at 3.5, so I'm taking it at 3.5. My analysis is basically still that there's a lot of turnover on the Michigan side, and I want to exploit that.
Yeah, I actually think, and I don't know if I've just been hanging out with you too long, but I think I said Tulsa. Quick look ahead there. No, I think Michigan might just be kind of low key bad this year, but we'll see.
They were low key bad last year.
I know. The problem
is that Michigan's team has been really mediocre, and there's a decent chance that, I mean, they're probably third best in the Big Ten East, but the Big Ten East might just be kind of garbage after Penn State. So,
right. Yeah. So I think maybe there'll be someone that we're looking at later, but for now, I'm not interested in them this week for sure. I like that pick. My next one is Tulsa minus 10.5 at USF. South Florida is just a bad team, in my opinion. They're not very good at all. They're 1-4 against the spread in their last five games. Meanwhile, Tulsa are 4-1 against the spread in their last five. I think Tulsa's defense is just too much. I don't think USF is going to be able to score much. Notre Dame shut them out. They were only able to score 7 versus Cincinnati. Their only win was versus the Citadel. and Tulsa is much better than that. We saw Tulsa do well against Oklahoma State this year. Give me Tulsa minus 10.5. Lock it up.
I like that spot, actually. Now we're going to get back to my wheelhouse. And before I will point this out, I added Ohio State first half and Minnesota points during the show because I'm nice. About to become a one trick pony.
Yeah.
So everyone knows I love sloppy games. Everyone knows I love games with first game of the season. So I'm going to start out with the Mountain West, and it's Utah State and Boise State. Both these teams like to throw a lot, and there's going to be a lot of strong crosswinds in this game. So I really like this spot. Sloppy first game sloppiness principle plus strong crosswinds. I am going to lock up Utah State and Boise State under 53.5.
All right. I like the fact that it's not in the 40s. 40 games make me super nervous.
Oh, I believe me. If more places were posting Michigan State and Rutgers, because that game is in like at like 44. But there's weird rules about betting on New Jersey amateur athletics to the point where basically no sports books are actually putting that game up to the point. So I will not be taking that game, despite the fact that I genuinely believe that game is going to end with like a total of 37.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so gross. Big Ten football is back. My next lock is Alabama. You found it for me at minus 20.5. So I'll take it at Tennessee. I was telling you before we hit record, I think if you bet Alabama against the spread this year, you'll go like 7-2. Like they're just explosive. They're dynamic. Sure, one or two games, they might, you know, the opposing team might get like a backdoor cover. It's not going to happen often. Alabama minus 20.5 against this Tennessee team that fired one of their defensive coaches this week. Has really struggled in a lot of areas. I think we'll see a lot of turnovers. I think Bama gets a short field. And even if they don't, Waddle can score 90-yard touchdown. Yeah, so I feel pretty good about this one. This one might be my favorite on my card this week.
I like that pick. I'm going to go back to the underwell because that's what I do. Illinois and Wisconsin. These teams were about 50-50 on unders last year. They actually were slightly better on unders than they were overs. Like I mentioned before, they are starting a brand new quarterback. And while I do like Graham Mertz, eventually I don't think they're going to go into a pass happy game. And I think Wisconsin is going to remain very run heavy this year. So because of that, and because again, first game principles, I'm taking Wisconsin and Illinois under 51.5. I think this game is probably one with the winning team winning with a score of like 27-ish. And if that's what the winning score is, I feel fairly confident we're not going to get to 50.
Yeah, that's a good one. These there's a lot of Big Ten unders. I love it. My next is Temple at Memphis minus 13. I'm going Memphis minus 13. They just looked so impressive on offense last week. I don't think Temple's going to be able to slow them down all that much. The over under in this game was something that I was tempted to play as well, but 71.5 just felt a little bit too high for me. But I do like Memphis minus 13.5. It does seem to be where most of the money is going, which makes me a tiny bit nervous. Maybe I'm missing something here, but maybe it's just the fact that Memphis's defense can leak points as well. So hopefully there's not one of those scenarios where it ends up biting me in the ass at the end of the game. But I think Memphis is a 2-touchdown better team than Temple 8 out of 10 times. So I'll take those numbers and I'll roll with Memphis.
Yeah, I like it.
They're 1-5 in their last 6 against the spread, which makes me a little nervous, but oh well.
Yeah, you're fine. Get a lot of points. Just hope that game turns into a shootout and Temple won't be able to keep up. Yep. I'm going back to the well. Maryland Northwestern under 55.5. Maryland and Northwestern are very bad offensively, and they're losing a lot. Other than Northwestern basically brings back most of their offensive line. So my guess is that a team that rushed the ball 40 plus times per game in 2019 is not going to come out and throw the ball 40 plus times. Pat Fitzgerald is 58% on unders for his career, and they are starting a brand new quarterback coming from Indiana, Peyton Ramsey. He was a decent enough quarterback. Yeah.
I didn't ever like him, but
he's fine. I believe he's from Cincinnati. I think he went to Cincinnati Elder High School. He's a decent enough quarterback. Nothing special. I don't think he's magically going to turn this offense around, but Maryland and Northwestern were both bottom 10 in offensive success rate last year. And Maryland is completely re-upping their offensive line. I don't know. I don't see this. I can't see Northwestern trying to turn this game into a high scoring affair, particularly when their strength is probably in their offensive line and their defense. I would expect this game to be very low scoring. Honestly, I would probably play this game as low as like 47.5. That's how confident I feel in the fact that there's not going to be points.
Yeah, I just had to double check that line because it seemed a little bit high when you read it out. And sure enough, yeah, I think it's a great call.
I spent a lot of time researching this game. I'm fairly confident in that line.
Well, I think it just shows that, you know, I think you're spot on with this pick because I would have guessed that line would have been lower because, I mean, Northwestern couldn't score to save their lives last year. And I know they've made some changes. They've got a new offensive coordinator and all that kind of stuff. But man, I just don't see this game.
And they're 11.5 point favorites in this game.
That, yeah. And they let Fitz likes playing slow. So, my next one, I've got the West Virginia Mountaineers -3 at Texas Tech. Man, do I like picking favorites? I just think this line is too low. I think I would have guessed this one at -5.5 to -6.5. So to me, I'm getting a couple extra points here. Texas Tech are 1-5 against the spread in the last six. Meanwhile, West Virginia is 2-1-1 this year against the spread. West Virginia, I thought, has looked pretty good at moments this year. They were able to take care of business versus Baylor, who I think is a really solid team. Texas Tech has a lot of issues. They've had very inconsistent quarterback play. West Virginia has one of the top offenses in the country. Granted, they've been able to play teams like Kansas, so that might be why. But West Virginia, to me, takes care of this one pretty handily. -3 feels like a great number. So I'm going to lock that one up.
I will say that our good friend Jordan Hoover and I were talking about this game early in the week. And both of our response to this was, what are we missing?
Right.
That game seems stupid. Or that line seems stupid. So we are definitely with you on that one. I like it a lot. I'm gonna go with my second to last one I have on the board is Miami and Virginia, under 58.5. Both of these teams create a lot of defensive havoc, so they're creating tackles for loss, they are creating interceptions, and they are creating turnovers. That is great. Miami has a lot of offensive line issues. They're allowing 22% havoc, and they're both below average on offensive success rate. The one other thing that is at least noteworthy, particularly because of the fact the way both of these teams are likely going to approach the offense, is that these two teams are very strong against the run. So you are going to see a lot of situations where the clock is still moving and you get a lot of like 3 and outs or like 6 and outs, stuff like that. So don't expect these to be really long extended drives. I would expect that both of these teams struggle offensively. So 58.5, I think we clear this one again fairly comfortably.
Yeah, my last one is FSU versus Louisville over 61. The total has gone over in 6 of Florida State's last 9 games, and it's gone over in 8 of Louisville's last 10 games. In the last 7 matchups between these two teams, the over is hit 5 times. I like it. Over 61, FSU, Louisville, lock it up. What are your thoughts on that
Matt? Those are really good trends you have, but I do want you to know you're wrong. I'm going to be on the opposite side of this game. Something we do not do frequently is
this is our worst.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty like cautious, and I don't try and go into like fighting with you on stuff. We're picking the same game just because I think our listeners like to hear about more stuff, but when I saw this game, I was looking at through a few like projections of this game, and this was one of the ones where there was the biggest discrepancy. So at 61 points, I will say most of the money has come in on the over so far, and that's why it's gone up from opening around 58 to all the way up to the 61 number. Here's what I like. Louisville's offense has a 38% success rate. Florida State has a 37% passing success rate. Both of these teams are sub 4 points per opportunity. So when they get, they're not strong at finishing drives. And Louisville's success rate overall on defense is 37%. So despite the fact that we think that like Miami lit them up and all these teams are going to just be able to do whatever they want, they've actually been fairly decent at slowing teams down. And particularly in this spot, they have only allow a 37.5 passing success rate. I just don't see how Florida State is going to recreate what they did last week, where they're actually scoring a decent amount of points. And I just think that Louisville isn't going to be able to run the score up. So I do think this is a little bit more low scoring affair. And because of that, I'm going to go against you.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I do think that Florida State's offense is a little bit more dynamic's definitely not right. Not the right word, more effective and efficient with the quarterback change. So I do think they'll be a little bit better. And I'm just assuming that last week's performances for Louisville are kind of the outlier. I think they're going to go back to being a little bit more successful on offense. It'll be interesting. I think I'd feel more comfortable with the number at 58, but I'm still good with 61. We're going to throw in a couple upset specials this week. One of them we've already talked about. I'm taking Minnesota at plus 140 against Michigan. So that's one of mine. What's one that you looked at that you liked, Matt?
I don't feel great about this one, but Baylor plays Texas this week, and I don't know why anyone feels confident about Texas. And if I can get Baylor at almost 2.5 to 1, I'm going to take that spot. So I think there's value there because I do think they can at least be a live dog and could pull off the upset.
Oh, I think that's great. I think Texas has yet to really show any clear identity. I think that's an interesting one. My other one is Cincinnati to beat SMU. The number there is plus 110. So those are my two upset specials. Looks like you have one more that you're adding right now, and that's a big number, plus 600. Talk to me, buddy. I want it. So
this UCF team is, while they are very dynamic on offense, one of the things they are also is they are very bad at giving up penalties. They're probably the most, I think they are still the most penalized team in all of college football.
I think so.
They are going up against a Tulane team that is 2-3. However, I don't know if that means a whole lot. Tulane's offense is still run by Willie Fritz, which is, he's one of the best lesser known coaches in the country. I don't think don't go lay your mortgage on this one. Don't go put anything silly down. This is one where you're throwing a little bit on there. You're just testing out because there's a little bit of value, because I think there's a chance that UCF starts reeling here. And this is when you start to see them kind of collapse a little bit and Tulane pulls off an upset.
This was one that I had in my original research. I was looking at the over in the Tulane UCF game, but ended up for some of the stuff that you said, I heard, I forget who I was listening to, but going into last week, UCF's false start penalties alone were more than any other team had in total penalties, which is just absolutely insane.
Well, I know where you heard that.
Was that on the cover?
It's covered.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, those guys are.
It's fine.
Yeah, those guys are great. I listened to a couple others, though, so I couldn't remember. I'm going to run down my board real quick, and then you can tell us your picks. But I'm taking App State -10.5 at Arkansas State. I'm also taking over 64.5. I'm stealing Ohio State 13.5 for the first half. Tulsa -10.5 at USF. Alabama -20.5 at Tennessee. Temple at Memphis. I'm taking Memphis at -13. West Virginia -3 at Texas Tech. And I'm taking the over in FSU Louisville at 61. My upsets are Cincy to beat SMU and Minnesota over Michigan.
We have a large board this week, so next week we're going to have to burn through these. But okay, so I got Ohio State -13.5 in the first half, Minnesota +3.5 for the game, Utah and Boise State going under 53.5, Illinois and Wisconsin under 51.5, Maryland and Northwestern under 55.5, Louisville and FSU under 61, and then Miami and Virginia under 58.5.
You're so gross with your unders.
I was pure under board until I talked myself into some fun.
I love it. And then your upset specials are Baylor and Tulane. That's good stuff. Thank you guys for listening. That was a long episode, but there was a lot to get into. Big Ten starting up. We're really excited. Of course, Mountain West is back. That's going to be fun too. I don't think we. Oh yeah, you have a Mountain West game on your board. Yeah. That's fantastic. Oh great, we're really excited. And you know what? You know what's probably the most exciting thing is this might be the last time you get to say the words you finish the show off with, because after this week, he's going to be too expensive.
Yeah, you should definitely buy Chris Olave right now.
All right, thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.